Okay. All right, Gutzbach and Gemar Chasima Tov, everyone. Thanks very, very much for joining. I know that things become a little bit more complicated in the times in which we live. Ordinarily, we'd be doing this Shabbos afternoon, and maybe, I don't know, maybe people would be more available, less available, I'm not sure. Maybe this modality is more convenient for some, probably less convenient for many others. I know it's not easy to start a shiur at 9 o'clock, so thanks very much for joining, both for the purpose of being able to get together, just as always, to be able to learn Torah together and for a little bit of Talmud Torah on a Motzi Shabbos is always a very, very special thing. But in particular, the Shabbos Shuva Drasha is meant to be a ramp up, and it's meant to help to frame at least some sort of dimension of what our Shuva is supposed to look like come Yom Kippur. This particular year, I think we're fortunate in that the Shabbos Shuva Drasha is coming so close to Yom Kippur itself, and it helps us to process and helps us to think about what Yom Kippur is supposed to be, what it's supposed to look like, what Tshuva is really supposed to look like, if it's really going to be meaningful and it's really going to be something that helps to create genuine and significant and sincere change, that we come out of Yom Kippur actually being fundamentally better people. So then we need to spend a good measure of time thinking about it. We need to spend a good measure of time learning about at least some dimension or another of what it is that we're trying to perfect, and we're trying to improve upon, and we're trying to develop. This shouldn't just be something that washes over us, and Yom Kippur just becomes another fast day in the list and the litany of all the fast days that we have. And do we survive? And I have my Yom Kippur survival guide, and I got through from beginning to end. Hopefully, it's a moving experience. It's a meaningful experience, even if it is one that comes with some measure of physical difficulty and physical discomfort. But it's all part and parcel of the process of changing and trying to utilize and leverage Yom Kippur as being a day that is meaningful just beyond itself. And I think that that's an important framing of this evening. I don't know that I've ever really done this before where I drilled down into one particular midah, one particular aspect or dimension of our personalities, of the way that we live and the way that we think, as I plan on doing tonight. And I think really then more than perhaps any other year, any other drasha, this is something that really needs to be chewed on and really needs to be ruminated over again and again and again, hopefully well beyond Yom Kippur, which is exactly what tshuva is supposed to look like. Tshuva is not a one-day affair. Tshuva is something that is really a process that we engage in over the course of our entire lives of constantly and always trying to better ourselves, always trying to become better, always trying to be more capable of Avdei Hashem. So when it comes to the attempt to perfect any given midah, usually tshuva, it's like it's open-ended. It's whatever we've been working on until this point. So now here's a little bit of extra fuel to throw on the fire. In drawing everybody's attention to a particular midah, I think more than ever, this is something that I hope will continue to think about. I think it's very important for all of us as members of a community, and particularly at this time that we're living through now. But certainly is not something that can be achieved, can be accomplished over the course of just a short span of time, over 1 hour shiur, over a 24-hour lead into Yom Kippur. But it's something that I hope that we'll continue to, again, to ruminate over and to continue to consider and allow it to impact us, to impact ourselves, to impact our personalities, to impact our development and our growth far thereafter. I want to begin with a story, at least with the first portion of a story. An introduction to a story that I hope we'll be able to complete by the evening's end, and I think will make a lot more sense to conclude with the conclusion of this story after a fair measure of learning together. And the story relates to the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim spent a lot of time over the course of his life traveling. He had different means of supporting himself at different times throughout his life. But specifically, as he got older and older, effectively his primary means and at some point the only means that he had of supporting himself was really through the sale of his Sfarim. Chafetz Chaim, for which he actually became known, and Shmir Salashon, and all of his various Sfarim on perfecting Midos, Abbas Yisrael, and the like, and of course the Mishnah Brura. So he would travel from town to town throughout Eastern Europe and cities to city throughout Eastern Europe, effectively hawking his wares and whatever meager living he was able to hobble together from selling Sfarim, which, as you can imagine, was not a great livelihood, but nevertheless didn't need much to get by. And this was how he did his job. So he would often find himself in some foreign cities, large and small, and would interact with and get to meet some different people from different cities throughout the landscape of Jewish Eastern Europe. So this wasn't exactly a small town, but he found himself one particular evening coming through Vilna. Vilna was just a massive, massive metropolis of Jewish life and Jewish activity back in the day, as you undoubtedly read and have heard. And he finds himself, or he takes himself to a Jewish inn, a place that he'll be able to spend the night and where he'll be able to get some food and have something to eat before bed, and knowing that it's all kosher v'osher. So he's seated there in the main dining room of the inn at a table just for himself. And although he always tried his best to travel, you know, incognito, and initially all of his svarim were published anonymously, it became clear, you know, pretty early on, and this was even before, you know, photography of individuals of gedolim. I mean, you know, you could see what I got on my back wall. Now we know, you know, a gadol b'Yisrael can't walk down the street without being noticed and being followed by an entourage, but not so then. But even so, the Chafetz Chaim had great renown, and he was known wherever it was that he went. So no sooner had he come into this inn, and he had a couple of conversations, and it was clear the svarim that he was carrying with him, and word had been received ahead of time. It was known who he was, and he was very, very well received. He's there, he's eating his dinner, you know, meekly and humbly in the corner. So he begins his dinner, and a few moments later, the doors swing open, right, to the dining room, and in walks just a huge brute of a man, full of just dripping with bravado, and has all these airs about him, and he crashes himself down on a chair at a table, and you know, snaps his fingers and you know, whistles and calls a waitress over, and he just in a very as boisterous and over the top arrogant a manner as you could possibly imagine, he orders what he's going to eat, and they get snappy, and I hope you know who I am, and let's make sure that it's here, and you know, they'll keep the drinks coming. And he's there having his dinner as well. The Chafetz Chaim is watching this person just with mouth agape. He cannot believe it, absolutely cannot believe that anybody would carry on this way in public. Doesn't he realize the perception that would surround him? This goes on over the course of the entire meal, and it gets worse and worse. Every interaction with the waitress and with the hostess is just more and more rude and more and more just obnoxious. And the Chafetz Chaim can barely tolerate it anymore. So he decides that he's going to, you know, pick himself up and, you know, hocheach tocheach es amitzecha. He's going to provide words of rebuke, provide words of mussar, and inform this person this is no way to act, and it's not appropriate. Whatever kind of bad day he's having or whatever it is, you know, to respond and to act in a way that's more appropriate when you're interacting with other human beings. And he starts to ease himself out of his chair, pick himself up, and it's clear which trajectory he's taking. And the host from across the room, the owner of the inn, sees what's going on, and he cuts him off. And he quickly pulls the Chafetz Chaim aside. He says, Rebbe, I beg you, it's just not worth it. It's not worth it. This fellow's a regular. We see him all the time. There's no talking to him. It's just not worth your effort. And I'm so concerned for the Rav's honor and the Rav's kavod. You go over there, he'll yell at you and he'll scream at you. You tell him how to act. He'll tell you to mind your own business. It's going to be a disaster. I'm afraid of this becoming actually violent, becoming actually physical. He said, so you know this stuff. So what's the story? Who carries on like this? What's going on? He said, listen, he's as rude and obnoxious as you see. Fact of the matter is he had no sort of Jewish upbringing whatsoever. Unfortunately, this person you see before, he was actually one of the Cantonists. He was one of the young Jewish boys who was taken at a very, very early age. He was 6, 7 years old when he was first taken from his home and impressed into the Tsar's army. And that's effectively where he grew up. And he grew up amongst the kinds of ruffians that we would never, never dare hope that our children would ever interact with. He had no kind of Jewish chinuch. He didn't go to any sort of Jewish school. He had no interaction with, you know, the finer finer human beings that you and I would like to associate with. And you know, even amongst the non-Jewish Gentile society, I mean, it's the dregs, the bottom of the barrel. And this was his upbringing. This is who he was around. And he was in the army until he was 18 years old. And then, you know, this is the product. This is the product. This is what you're looking. This is what you're looking at in front of you. So the Chafetz Chaim says, so what brings him to a Jewish inn? What brings him to a Jewish inn? What's the story? And the you know, the ballot bus just gives one big shrug of the shoulders. I don't know. I don't know what brings him in here. He comes in all the time, and this is exactly how he acts. He's rude, and he's obnoxious, and it's over the top, and it's and with this you know, boisterous, arrogant kind of way about him. But he shrugs his shoulder. I don't know what brings him in here. I don't know why it is that he continues to come back to a Jewish inn. Fine, Chafetz Chaim leaves it there with the owner. But he resolves, at least to himself, that I'm going to talk to him. And the conversation that he has is remarkable. But I think in order to frame that conversation and appreciate in depth and in all of its various layers, what exactly it was that the Chafetz Chaim was able to do over the course of that conversation. So we need to prepare ourselves a little bit. And this is where I want to take you through some, I think, really valuable and really worthwhile source material here as we begin to speak about this concept and this notion of Havidanis Kala Adam L'Kafzichos, what it means to judge someone else favorably. So I've pointed this out I don't remember when it was, at some point between Mincha and Maariv, we were learning Sefer Chafetz Chaim, and in the introduction, we'll get to this as an actual source, the introduction to Sefer Chafetz Chaim, he notes a number of actual mitzvos in the Torah, both positive and negative, asin and lavin, that a person might violate should he come to speak Lashon Hara, one of which is the mitzvah of being done as kol ha'adam l'kaf sechos, judging somebody favorably. And first and foremost, what we should be aware of is that this is actually a mitzvah. Sometimes we get caught up in the idea of certain things, but yeah, it's a nice idea, it's flowery, it's beautiful, halavai, that's for the tzaddikim, that's for the greats, but you know, for regular people, we have like Shabbos, and we have kashrus, and we have mitzvos, and good, it's ideal, and it's wonderful, theoretically anyway, to work on our midos as well, but those are more gray areas and the like. And I think first and foremost, what we should become aware of, what we should try to grapple with, is the degree to which this is actually a formal obligation. Is it a formal obligation? And then what are the parameters? What exactly is this mitzvah? What is this halacha in the first place of being dan l'kaf sechos, of judging somebody favorably? Starting point, I think, certainly, because this is where the actual lashon comes from, is from the Mishnah in Avos in the first Perek Aleph, Mishnah Vav. Yoshua ben Prachya, Omer Rabbi Yoshua ben Prachya says, and judge everyone favorably. So, sort of open-ended, what does it exactly mean to judge somebody favorably? Who are we talking about? To what degree? How so? Who is the object of my judgment in the first place? And here is where we find some different opinions and some different framing of this mitzvah and of this halacha amongst the Rishonim. The Rambam says, take a look at source 2. In Yano, what is this issue? What is this matter? We're talking about a person, I don't know if he's a tzaddik in a rasha or a rasha. He is what we would generally call a beinoni, or at least I presume that he's a beinoni. And it's important to mention that this halacha, and you know, we can only cover so much together this evening, this halacha with respect to a known tzaddik or a known rasha may well take on a very, very different flavor. The presumption may need to be, when it comes to a tzaddik, that even something that I might see right in front of my eyes as being peculiar or as being wrong or in violation. Obviously, everything has its limits, but that there might be much more of a compelling reason to judge a tzaddik favorably because of track record. And similarly, if somebody's a pure rasha, then there might be something of a track record there to really to take into account and to recognize that I may not have to judge you as favorably as someone who is a beinoni. I think for the most part in our lives, that's who we encounter. It is unlikely that we encounter, at least on a daily basis, people who are pure tzaddikim, halavai, and some people have very special relationships with very holy tzaddikim. And it's also very unusual to interact with pure Rishon. For the most part, the people that we see in our lives, our friends, our family members, our community, beinonim, just like ourselves. They're made up, they're complex people, made up of good and made up of bad. They do good things and sometimes they mess up and they do bad things. But for the most part, this is who we're talking about when we interact with other people from our social spheres. And therefore, this should really be the focus first and foremost. So what does the Rambam say to do? The Tir'eu Sheya'aseh Maisa that he's done something. We see that he's performed some sort of maisa, o yomar davar, or he says something. So whether this is speech or actual deed, she'im tifreshehu al derech achas. On the one hand, I could explain it according to one line of reasoning, yatov, and I would come out with a very positive sort of view. V'im tifreshehu al derech acheras, and I could also look at it in another light, and in that capacity, yira, I would assume that what he's done is bad. So therefore, kach oso ahatov v'lo tachshov bo'ra. You should presume that he's done good. If you have something that could really go in either way, and I don't know if he necessarily did the wrong thing or the right thing. It depends on how you look at it, and I'm not sure. I don't know what I really saw necessarily. There could be more than meets the eye here. I'm not sure exactly what it was that he did or what it was that he said. You could interpret it in different things, in different ways. You could interpret the words in different ways. You could interpret his actions in different ways. How should I judge him? Judge him favorably. Judge him favorably. If you go in either way, go in either direction, he's a Benoni. He doesn't necessarily have a track record for bad, not necessarily one for pure good either, but look at the best. Assume the best. Assume the best in people, assuming we have the ability to do so, assuming it's not exactly clear. What the Rambam seems to be suggesting is that when we see something with our very eyes, don't assume that you really saw it with your very eyes, and don't assume that you actually saw what you think you saw. Meaning there may well be more than meets the eye. There may be a lot more here than we necessarily presume or detect at first blush. There might be a lot more that's going on. Don't assume that if you saw somebody or heard somebody speak certain words, it's necessarily derogatory. It's necessarily Lashon Hara. Maybe you didn't understand. Maybe it could be interpreted differently. And if indeed there's any room to interpret his deeds differently, so then we should do our best to do so. That's what it means to be down the kafsachos. That's at least version one. And I think even version one, I think this is such a sea change for who we are. Maybe it's just our culture. Maybe it's just our society. I think so often we pride ourselves on the ability to, you know, we have street smarts and we're shrewd and we're not naive and you can't pull the wool over my eyes and I can see through you. I can see through the facade and through the veneer. And the question is, at what point does that spill over into cynicism? At what point does that spill over into not just being cautious and being careful, but I actually assume the worst in people? I actually assume that the deed that you've done is wrong and is bad and is evil. I actually assume that your actions and that your words are wrong and are bad and they're evil, as opposed to saying, maybe, I don't know, I'm not sure, you know, it could be interpreted this way, it could be interpreted that way, don't jump to conclusions, I'm not so sure. Sometimes we end up feeling, I think, especially again, in our world and in our culture, we end up feeling like we're going to be branded as a Pollyanna and being overly naive and being gullible if we even attempt to presume that a person was actually acting honorably and admirably, when I could say, no, I can cut through that. I can see right through that. I know what he's actually up to, and he's scheming, he's conniving, because somehow or another, it makes us feel more shrewd and more calculating and more streetwise. And then we give ourselves a pat on the back. This is not, there's no other way to say it. This is not the hashkafa of the Torah. This is not an ideal. We don't want to be overly gullible. We don't have the wool pulled over our eyes. And indeed, when it comes to our own interaction with people and our determination, our decision to keep certain company or to not keep certain company, to enter into relationships with certain people as opposed to others, we do need to make some measure of judgment and some measure of assessment. But to walk around with the perspective that you are guilty until proven innocent, at least in my own mind, if not in the court of public opinion, is wrong, is not what we're being driven and motivated and encouraged to do and to act and to perceive of things by Chazal. We're being encouraged to perceive of people as basically being good. You're Benoni. I don't have any reason to believe that everything that you do is pure vicious, is pure evil, is purely vindictive. Let me assume the best. That's in terms of actual deed and actual word. Now, obviously, this is a tall order, because so often we may have seen words or heard words and seen deeds that match up to whatever it is that we're seeing right in front of us now. And it's been proven that this person acted maliciously and was acting in a manner that was completely inappropriate. And maybe it becomes difficult for us to believe, especially what happens when you see something right in front of your face that really is bad. There's no other way to explain it. That was Lashon Hara. There's no other way to understand it. you're really not abiding by halacha. Whether you carry yourself, whether you carry yourself in public, whether you carry yourselves, yourself ben adam l'chavero, whether you carry yourself ben adam l'makom, I can see it. I can see it with my own eyes. It's not as simple as, well, I see the tefillin in shul, and I've been in shul all morning. I don't know. I assume this person wasn't, just didn't put tefillin on. So that's when we try. Maybe he's sick. Maybe we don't know what's going on. Maybe there's some sort of family emergency. Maybe there's maybe he has another pair of tefillin at home. Maybe he has he has a spare pair. Whatever it is, maybe he goes to the office. He has a pair. I don't know. But what happens when? No, I actually see you. You're actually here, and you're wearing tefillin. And I see how you carry yourself during davening. When you talk and how you interrupt others and whatever it is. So that becomes much more challenging. And I think for that, when it comes to trying to process what happens when we see people and when we see activities, when we see actions, when we hear words, that become much more difficult to actually square away with appropriate behavior. So now enter Rabbeinu Yonah. So Rabbeinu Yonah, again, he introduces and he says that we're talking about somebody who's really an Ish Beinoni. Somebody who's kind of in between, and we don't know exactly how to judge, and it could kind of go either way. So he says at the end here, if there's any way for me to try to judge this person, to say that it's that he's zochet, favorable, that it wasn't purely inappropriate, it wasn't a pure violation, or well, we'll see in a second. Yesh lo lomar, what should I try to say about him? That litova niskaven. Litova niskaven is very, very different from what the Rambam says. Rabbeinu Yonah says, if there's any way that I can say that what I see in front of me is that litova niskaven, that he intended towards good. He intended to do good. He attempted to do good. I don't know, even if I can see clearly what his actions are, even if I heard clearly what his words are, I don't know. Maybe he intended to do good. This was Lashon Hara. There's no other way to spin it. According to the Rambam, at least the way the Rambam speaks about the Mishnah here, according to the Rambam, that's it. It's over. The mitzvah's over. What I heard was Lashon Hara. There's no other way to spin it. According to Rabbeinu Yonah, there's still more to be done. Because how do I know? Maybe Latovin is coming. Maybe he intended to do good. Maybe the reason why he was sharing that was because in his mind, this was somehow or another for Toelis. He was trying to achieve some sort of benefit. I can't see the benefit. I don't get it. I don't know it. I don't understand it. Maybe in his mind, the person about whom he's speaking is so wicked, is so evil, is so corrupt that the prohibition of Lashon Hara no longer applies to that person. I don't see it. I don't get it. I don't understand it. But maybe, Letovin is kaveh. Maybe his kavan was to do good. Rashi says the same thing there on the Mishnah. Al kol shetishma alav emorshin is kavi letova. Maybe he's trying to do good. It's bad. It is objectively bad. What I'm seeing in front of my eyes, this is bad. What I'm hearing with my ears, this is bad. There's no other way to spin this. And I think here it's important to differentiate. The notion of being dan lekaf sechus does not mean entering into moral relativism. It doesn't mean saying, listen, who am I to judge? I have my way of doing things. You have your way of doing things. They have their way of doing things. He has his way of doing it. She has her way of doing things. And it's all good. And it's all fine. And elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. And we can all sit around and sing Kumbaya. That's not what Dan Lekaf Sechos means. Certainly not according to Rabbeinu Yonah, Rashi. The idea is trying to crawl into somebody else's mind and seeing that niskaven letova, seeing that I get the act. The act is what it is. The act is immoral. The act is halachic violation. The act is kineged haTorah. The act is just not menschlich. The act is inappropriate. But can I ever truly say that niskaven lera'a? Maybe in certain instances I can. But overwhelmingly, this creates a huge Pesach. It's a huge opportunity, a huge opening for us to try to be able to identify with another person and say, maybe niskaven letova. Maybe as wrong as your actual actions are, and I'm not excusing the actions. I'm not saying that, well, the actions are really okay and they're right for you. They wouldn't be for me. None of that. And the conversation of elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim and these and those and what you do and what I do in different minhagim in different ways, there's plenty of room to talk about that. But sometimes there's not. Sometimes the way that you're acting is just purely wrong. Even so, even when I see that, how quick am I to jump all over you and assume you're evil? You're a Rasha. How do I know you're Rasha? Because look at what you did. As opposed to seizing on the opportunity to just like let it sit a little bit, like marinate in that a little bit. Wonder, do I really get this person? Do I really know this person? Do I know what their kavana was? Is it possible that they were in iskavin latova even as they're acting poorly? Even as I see a halachic violation in front of me? Is there no other way to spin it, for me to spin it inside of my own mind? They're not necessarily as careful. Talking in shul. Ay, gefalach, terrible, horrible, really, really horrible. It's coming with Tovo. What's his going? Come on, he's listening. He's trying. He's being friendly, and he's saying good Shabbos, and he's saying hello. Is it okay? Is it no? There's no other way to frame it. That was the wrong thing to do. But maybe Neskavin Latov, maybe he doesn't know, maybe he doesn't get it, maybe he doesn't appreciate, maybe he's just trying to be nice and warm and friendly. Is there another way of looking at it? Is there another way of spinning it that is not so damaging to the very character of the person as I perceive of it in my mind? The reality is that as much as this is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, and as much as this is a very, very important conversation about these two sorts of manners and ways of thinking about what Dalma Kavsachos actually looks like and what it should ideally be, the question still becomes, strictly speaking, is this actually a mitzvah, a pure mitzvah? What exactly do we make of statements in Pirkei Avos? Are they ideals to shoot for? Are they the baseline? Is this the way that we demand that everybody, absolutely everybody, acts? Maybe yes, maybe no. So here's the Rambam. The Rambam back at the end of that same piece on Pirkei Avos, where he's discussing being Dalma Kavsachos, he throws in a very, very interesting and important line, frankly, which is that in summing up, he says, Tzarech b'derech ha-chasidus shetadin l'kafzechos. Ezekot sheyia mishnei k'tzos. As much as you possibly can incline towards the positive angle, you should. Why? Because that's derech ha-chasidus. Derech ha-chasidus doesn't mean bekesh and gartel. Derech ha-chasidus means this is going above and beyond. There's the strict letter of the law, and then there's going above and beyond. So the Rambam says, that's what the Mishnah is telling you. Havidanis kol adam l'kafzechos. This is what it means to abide by this midas chasidus. If not, seemingly a baseline halacha. The Rambam in Hilchas Deus in Mishnah Torah, speaks about the comportment of a Talmud Chacham. And in speaking about a Talmud Chacham, speaks about a number of different midos that he should abide by. One of them is, V'dan es kol ha'adam l'kafsechos. He should judge everyone favorably. For a Talmud Chacham, we expect to abide by midas chasidus. For the rank and file, perhaps not. Maybe it's not a strict mitzvah. It happens to be, though, that Rabbeinu Yonah, not on Avos, but in Shari Tshuva. So when Rabbeinu Yonah speaks about the midah being Danas Kol Adam L'Kafzachos, being Dama Kafzachos, he connects it, actually as the Gemara really does, but he connects it to an actual mitzvah, and a mitzvah d'oraisa. But tzedek tishpot amisecha, in righteousness, or it's part of the question here, how exactly do you translate tzedek? But tzedek tishpot amisecha, with tzedek, you should judge your neighbor. You should judge your friends. What does it mean to judge b'tzedek? It can mean judging righteously. It can mean judging favorably, like tzedakah, being gracious, going the extra mile in judging another person. Rabbeinu Yonah actually connects this to a mitzvah d'oraisa, says that this is an actual biblical mitzvah to judge somebody favorably. So it seems like we have something of a standoff between the Rambam and Rabbeinu Yonah. So I might say, listen, I want to be, you know, I want to pass like the Rambam. I want to assume that this is really midas chasidus. I'm going to let myself off the hook. And if I can't necessarily do midas chasidus, fine. So I'll work on like the other things that are perhaps more pressing and more front and center in terms of my tshuva, in terms of what I'm trying to work on. And we'll leave the Rabbeinu Yonah. Okay, that's, you know, it's his own opinion. Fine. It's a das yachid. And maybe not something that I necessarily have to contend with. The idea of presuming that this is even as strict and severe as a mitzvah d'oraisa. Problem is that the Rambam himself, Sefer HaMitzvos, this is just some of the halachic backdrop, the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, when he speaks about this mitzvah, B'tzedek tishpot amisecha, he says, u'bichlala, and included in this is gam kein, she yischayiv, she adunas chaver, l'kafsechos. Sefer HaMitzvos, the Rambam enumerates each one of the 613, says, B'tzedek tishpot amisecha, means effectively what the Mishnah Navos tells you. Mishnah Novos tells you that you have to be judge everybody favorably. That's what this pasuk means. This pasuk isn't just what the dayanim are supposed to do. It's not just the behavior and the comportment of the dayanim in a beis din. It's each and every Jew. Every single Jew has to judge everybody else favorably. It's an actual mitzvah d'oraisa. Obvious question is, so what's going on in the Rambam? What is it? Is it a mitzvah? Is it midas chasidus? Is it a d'oraisa? Is it just a nice idea? Just a concept? So the Chafetz Chaim, as I mentioned before, quotes this mitzvah in his introduction to Lashon Hara, because so often when we speak Lashon Hara, almost by definition, I'm running afoul. Oh, I may well be run afoul of judging somebody favorably. Somebody who I should have given maybe a little bit more leeway, somebody I should have given the benefit of the doubt, and I didn't. And that's what brought me then to speak Lashon Hara. So often when I speak Lashon Hara, I also violate this mitzvah. The Chafetz Chaim says that this is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa. And the Be'er Mayim Chaim, we don't have time to go through it now, but you're welcome to take a look. It's this piece at the bottom. The Be'er Mayim Chaim are the footnotes. Sometimes we think of Sefer Chafetz Chaim. Sefer Chafetz Chaim is a, you know, it's a nice thing. You know, if we're trying to think about not speaking Lashon Hara, we put it in like the Machshava category. It's like a Musar Sefer. It's not a Musar Sefer. It's a halachic work, and it's an impressive halachic work, because effectively what the Chafetz Chaim did is accumulated all the various halachas of Lashon Hara, which was a whole realm of halacha that doesn't get really its own area in some of the other halachic encyclopedias that had been prepared to that point. Doesn't really take up a huge or as much space as you would expect. And let's say Mishneh Torah, Shulchan Aruch, Mishneh Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim rather puts it together. So in the Be'er Mayim Chaim, the very, very impressive footnotes on Sefer Chafetz Chaim, deals with this issue. This issue, Rambam, Rabbeinu Yonah, what's the story with the Rambam? Is the Rambam arguing on Rabbeinu Yonah? Is it just a midas chasid? Is it just a nice thing or something that, strictly speaking, we all have to do? And the Chafetz Chaim says, listen, Sefer Mitzvos is a Sefer HaMitzvos. The Sefer HaMitzvos is actual halacha. This is the actual mitzvah. Why is it then that the Rambam says in certain places and in some contexts that it's only a midas chasidus, it's just a nice idea, it's a midah to work on? He says, look very, very carefully, says the Chafetz Chaim at the Lashon. In a Sefer HaMitzvos, and the Rambam quotes it, he says, B'tzedek tishpat amisecha, what's included in this? She's chayv shiyadun es chavero l'kafsechos. Judge your friend favorably. Who's your friend, says the Chafetz Chaim? Somebody you know. You know this person. What is he? He's a Benoni. I know him. I know her. She's good and she's bad. He's good and he's bad. He's pretty much, you know, the kind of person who'd say, oh, good guy, you know, friends with him, fine. You know, basically, is he perfect? Does he do everything right? No, he's got plenty of foibles and plenty of shortcomings. Take a look at the Rambam in Mishneh Torah. V'dan es kol ha'adam l'kafsechos. That's the actual Lashon as we find in Pirkei Avos. And this is why the Rambam in Pirkei Avos explains it the way he does. In Pirkei Avos, who are we saying that you should judge favorably? Kol ha'adam. What, every single person? Every single person. I've never met you before in my entire life. Zero track record. I wouldn't even say that you're a friend. I wouldn't say you're a decent guy. I don't know you from Adam. I'm supposed to judge you favorably? If you're a Talmud Chacham, the answer is yes. Because we expect more. We expect more of you. We expect, if naivete in the Jewish worldview is a maila, then we assume that a Talmud Chacham will come through in spades on that midah to a greater degree than just the average Joe, than just the rank and file. If you're a Talmud Chacham, judge everybody favorably, even if it's not somebody you've ever met before. Kol Adam. That's why the Rambam on the Mishnah Novos, which uses that expression, Kol Adam, every person, says, yeah, that's a midas chasidus. What's the actual mitzvah? The actual mitzvah is, listen, it's somebody you know. If it's your chaver, somebody's a friend, if I know him, is he perfect? No. You want to know what's wrong with him? I mean, clear your schedule. I could tell you what's wrong with him. But, you know, he's a good guy. He's in his bench look. I appreciate his company. You know, he does chesed, and he cares, and he keeps kosher, and whatever. He's a Benoni. Somebody I know to be a Benoni, I'm chayev to judge him favorably. Somebody that perhaps I've never met before. So that perhaps is something else. One other important little nugget here, when we think about the actual halachic mandate that I have, very, very interesting idea, is actually brought in a sefer called L'Re'acha Kamocha, all about Ben Adam L'Chavero, and after L'Re'acha Kamocha, different elements thereof. So a whole lengthy piece on on some of the backdrop of down the Eskola Adam Lakasakos mentions a very, very interesting idea. Let's take a look at the heading. Tchumim Shonim, right? Those of us who are learning Dafyomi right now, so we're knee-deep in Tchumim. A Tchum is an area. A Tchum is a sphere. So this actually, he says that he seems that he sort of came up with this idea on his own, and then he quotes that he afterwards he saw that that Rav Hillel Zaks mentions this, and he quotes the name of Rav Shlomo Zalman. Rav Shlomo Zalman also believed this to be true. That in terms of sizing up whether or not you're somebody who should be judged favorably or not, so I might be very quick to assume that, oh, well, this person's a Russia. This person's a Russia. How can I judge him favorably? He's a Russia. We offer a much more nuanced approach. This is ultimately coming from Rav Shlomo Zalman, that we should look at this as a much more, you know, fractured. People are complex. People are fractured. People are bifurcated in their avodas Hashem and in their midos and things that they do. People who could, there's cognitive dissonance everywhere. And somebody who might be very, very machpid in one area is especially heinous in his behavior in another area. And that's the reality. But we should not be so quick to judge somebody because, listen, I know that this is the guy who's always speaking Lashon Hara. And therefore, when I saw him, eating something and I didn't, you know, exactly see the wrapping, I have to assume it was Treif, because he speaks Lashon Hara, it must have been Treif, right? I know that this is somebody who, I've seen him, certain infractions of Hilchos Shabbos, whatever it is, and therefore, it must be that his kitchen is totally Treif. Again, does this mean that you necessarily want to eat out of that person's kitchen? That's a different conversation. And absolutely, we should take certain safeguards for ourselves, and we shouldn't be naive to the degree that we get ourselves into trouble because of interactions and because of the company that we keep, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of jumping to the conclusion that a person's character is completely bad, is completely rotten from the inside out, because in one given area, in one given tchum, in one given sphere, we've seen behavior that's less than stellar, is not a conclusion that we should jump to. Sizing it up, we have an obligation. We have an obligation. It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. It may well be a mitzvah, according to certain Rishonim, to effectively judge everybody, anybody who should be presumed to be a Beinoni. These are most of the people that we interact with, to try to judge favorably. It may be that this only applies to people that have a little bit of a track record, at least with us, that we know them more or less. But even so, this is most of the people that we interact with. What does it mean to judge somebody favorably? On the one hand, yes, if we see an actual action, an actual activity that could be interpreted in different ways, then perhaps we should do our best to actually do so and say, not to jump to conclusions and not to make assumptions and not to say that you've probably acted poorly. We shouldn't assume that if it can be reinterpreted otherwise, although that's a taller order. But even greater than that is, what about Niskavin Latova? What about the possibility that he means well and he's trying to do good, and that what I see in front of my very eyes, even if as I judge the action, I must judge the action and I must declare that this action, this activity, this behavior is unacceptable, can I truly say and fully say that I know exactly what's going on in his mind, that I know exactly that he was niskavin l'ra'i, he's again rotten from the inside out, or Do I give a little bit of space? Do I give a little bit of space? And do I not jump to conclusions? And do I allow myself? I must allow myself to try to marinate, not just inside of my own head, but inside of his head a little bit, and think that perhaps maybe he really, really means well, even if this is coming out so very, very wrong. It's a halakhic obligation. But I would argue that it is so much more important than that, not to in any which way belittle halacha and halachic obligation, but this is like cosmic. This is huge. To think about this midah and where it can carry us and how we need this particular midah to carry us, perhaps so much more than other halachos and other mitzvahs. So let's begin that conversation. The Gemara in Shabbos says, Tanu Rabbanon hadan es chaver, hadan chaver, I'm sorry, lekaf zuchos, danin osol es chos. Writes that if we judge other people favorably, and this is clear from the context of the Gemara, up in heaven, we're going to be judged favorably. HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges us more favorably if we judge others more favorably. Hashem smiles at us when we exhibit the sort of behavior that we then makes a lot of good sense, turn to him and we would ask the same. Hashem, there's so much that we've done wrong. Hashem, there's so much. Who wants to go into Yom Kippur saying that, Hashem, you know what? I hope you really judge me according to the strict letter of the law, as opposed to being a little bit more generous and being a little bit more expansive. Are we living up to that same standard? I've been using this phrase, quite a bit recently. I think it's so true in so many dimensions of what we see and what we know about a Kadosh Baruch Hu's judgment and about tshuva. You know, we're very, very taken, bizman hazeh, with the notion of a matching campaign. So what's the idea of a matching campaign? A matching campaign, you know, it works on both ends. I feel great about it because this way I only have to give $18 and it looks like I gave $72 and I look like a big macher. But also, how is it that I can convince somebody to write the big check? I go to somebody and I say, listen, we need $100,000 for our organization. Why should I give you $100,000? Because it's a really, really important organization. We all believe in it. We think it's great. We think it's wonderful. We think it's important. Prove it. Prove to me that you think it's really wonderful. Prove to me that your actual stakeholders, that your constituents really, really believe in this thing. If they believe in it, then I'll believe in it also. Let them raise $100K and then I'll cut you a check for $100K also. It's a matching campaign. HaKadosh Baruch Hashem, you know, please judge me favorably. Do I really have any decent excuse for the Lashon Hara that I've spoken this year? Is there any way for me to really, really justify all of the Bittul Torah? Okay, you know, I was really tired. How frequently can we just spin the same excuses around before Hashem's like, come on. If I judge you favorably, were you really so tired that you couldn't, 5 minutes? 5 minutes? You needed the 5 extra minutes in bed? We all need to be judged favorably. If we are to be judged strictly, this Yom Kippur or any Yom Kippur, we don't stand a chance. We don't stand a chance. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? He says, matching campaign. Don't you dare come into the shul. Don't you dare hold the machzor. Don't you dare start streaming tears, talking about how you need a better year, and it's got to be better than the one that we've had, and please, HaKadosh Baruch, we can't have the magefa anymore, and we can't stand it, and we can't tolerate it, and this has got to be the year that I need parnasa, that I need health, and then I need better relationships, and then I need all the different tikkunim and all the different things in my life fixed that I need fixed. Please, Hashem, am I worthy of it? No, I'm not worthy of it. Have I really given you enough? Have I really done enough? Have I really made good on all of the incredible, incredible, huge, massive endowments that you've presented to me in my life? The health that you've already given me, and the eyes that I have in my head, and the relationships that I already have, the family, and the support, and the just baseline simchas hachaim. Do I have any way of explaining why I haven't done more with all that? I have no way of explaining it. All I'm doing is I'm asking for mercy. We can't dare come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with that. And all the while, not be willing to be merciful ourselves. Not be willing to be compassionate ourselves. Not be willing to crawl into somebody's mind and say, you know what, maybe Niskavim Latova. Maybe you had some thought, something in mind that was really for the good. Maybe this wasn't malicious. Maybe it wasn't as malicious as it comes across. Maybe I can peel back those layers and find expose something that from your past that may have motivated this, something from your upbringing that may have motivated this. I don't have to psychoanalyze everybody, but just the realization that I don't fully know you and I don't fully get you. How is it that I've come to the decisions that I've made in my life? How is it that, you know, if I was in that position, I would have acted better? You know why? Maybe because I was given more education, or maybe because I'm fundamentally happier, or maybe just because the way that my life worked out has been better or easier. I've been given more clarity on this issue, and not everybody has. So can I really judge you? Can I really say that you're niskaving the rock? If I was in that position, I would have acted differently. Maybe you're not. You weren't necessarily given those things. You don't necessarily have either those gifts or the way of looking at things that I do. Can I really stand here and absolutely declare niskavim lera'ah and not niskavim letova? Can I absolutely say with certainty that it was bad and not good, and then still pivot this direction, look up towards the heavens and ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please, just mercy, please, judge me favorably. Hadon chaver l'kaf zechos, donen oso l'zechos. The Gemara in Shabbos, an earlier Gemara in Shabbos, says that hachoshin b'ksherim, when we judge people are really kosher. We judge people unfavorably, who were worthy of a favorable judgment, loke begufo, such a person is going to be stricken in his body. This is something certainly that we should be mindful of this year. We've had a year where so many have been stricken, begufo. So there's an interesting question that the Chassam Sofer brings up about this Gemara. He says, you know, usually HaKadosh Baruch Hu first hits us, first gives us a patch in our mammon, in our possessions, in our properties. The way that we usually find Hashem's interaction with us in this world with respect to Onesh, when Hashem tries to wake us up, is that there's something of a hierarchy. What he usually does, first and foremost, is that he strikes our possessions, then works up to our body if we're still not getting the message, if we still haven't heard the alarm. So why is this different? Why is Choshed B'Ksheirim any different? Question number one. Question number two, by the way, about the notion of Choshed B'Ksheirim, is the Gemara in Yoma. The Gemara in Yoma, really the Mishnah in Yoma, describes how back in the days of the inroads that the Sadducees were making into the Jewish mainstream and even into the Kahuna, there is this concern. There is this concern that maybe the Kohen Gadol that we're looking at right before our very eyes is actually a Sadducee. So when the Chachamim gather together on Yom Kippur night and inform the Kohen Gadol of all the avodah that he has to perform, they also make him take a shvua, saying effectively, swear to us that you're not a Sadducee. Swear to us that you're really going to follow our direction on this. And the Mishnah says that the Kohen Gadol cries and that the Chachamim also cry. The Kohen Gadol cries that he was accused, and the Chachamim cry, why? Because they have to be Choshed B'Ksheirim, perhaps, and Choshed B'Ksheirim loke begufa. Many ask, what are they crying? They're not really being Choshed B'Ksheirim. It's a text. You're just reading a text. You're just reading off the paper. This is the line we're supposed to say. We don't know. It's not personal. It's not against you necessarily. So why do they need to be so concerned and so bothered, so beset by this possibility that they're being Choshed B'Ksheirim? They're not. It's not being Choshed B'Ksheirim. So this is a very, very interesting Sefer Divrei Shalom. And he quotes here from the Maharal of Prague. And the Maharal says that when it comes to Choshed B'Ksheirim, meaning the inverse effectively of being down the Kafsachos, when you judge somebody who should have been judged favorably, unfavorably, you know what happens? What I do effectively, the way that this works metaphysically, is it's like taking, uses a slightly different mashal, you're welcome to take a read on your own. But it's like taking a bouncy ball. Right, and throwing it against a wall. It's like handball, or like we used to play it's called suicide when I was like a tennis ball against a brick wall, and it bounces back. When you launch that chashad, that suspicion, and it doesn't stick, it's out there, it's there now, and it bounces around really right back at you until it finally has something to stick upon. Meaning to say that ordinarily we think of when there's an infraction, there's an onesh. This isn't onesh. It's not punishment. It's just mida keneged mida. It is what it is. It's just a pure consequence. It's a consequence, says the Maharal Miprag. That's why we say choshed b'ksheirim loke begufo. Meaning this is why this also helps to explain the Chassam Sofer's question. Why is it that we jump to loke begufo? Why is it so harsh? Why is that the onesh that this person deserves? Shouldn't he get a warning first? It's not a matter of punishment. It is what it is. You create a chashad. You create suspicion. Let's see how you do with suspicion. That suspicion is out there. You want to open the Pandora's box of suspicion? It's out there now. What happens when the spotlight shines on you? You don't want to be down the kafsachos. I'm going to stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What happens when we look around the shul? When we look around the shul on Yom Kippur? Is it that cognitive dissonance reaches a point where we are effectively able to almost simultaneously look down at the mach, certainly ask Hashem, please forgive me, I've done so much wrong. We clap. And all at the same time, I look down across the room and say, oh, I hate that guy. Oh, he's just, ugh. Oh, what he does, his behavior and what he does, and he's obnoxious, and he's not makbid on halacha, and I don't even think he keeps Shabbos, and I don't even think he keeps kosher, and I don't even think this, that, the other thing, and he speaks Lashon Hara, and all of these things are just killing around in my head, All the while I'm turning to Hashem and I'm asking, you know, please Hashem, I don't really have any good excuse. I'm just asking, you know, try to be, I don't know, you know, like I mean well. I mean well, like I'm a good guy. I'm a good guy, so judge me favorably. I know that I've sinned with this, but really I'm a good guy. I mean well, I just, you know, I mess up sometimes. Are we willing to extend that same courtesy to the people who are standing around us? In the shul, out of the shul, friends, relatives, or are we being hypocritical? Are we asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a service that we ourselves would never dare lend another person? It's mida keneged mida. You want to suspect, you want to be suspicious, you want to raise your eyebrows at other people? Fine. Spotlight's on now. What happens when it gets shined on you? The reason why they need to cry for being Choshe B'Ksheirim, even though it's true they're just reading from a script, is because this is how it goes. We've turned the spotlight on. And that spotlight then can so easily just swing back across the other side of the room. And it can be shined on us. It's not just an onesh. It's a reality. We create a reality. We make the bed. And then we're forced to lie in it. Chavetz Chaim Shmir Salashon spends an entire segment discussing a variety of different midos, one of which, is being down the kafsachos. And he discusses the importance, how critical it is to be down the kafsachos. He says, and I'll just read the very, very beginning here. Try to zoom in a little bit. V'hinei yadua, it's known, t'b'inyin ha-zechuyos sh'yesh b'yad ha'adam af im k'chol yirivun. Even though I might have piles and piles of zechuyos, tons of mitzvos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not out to get us. He doesn't just remember the averus, he also remembers the mitzvos. You know what the problem is? The problem is even the mitzvos aren't so perfect, aren't absolutely as ideal as they should be, aren't so sparkling and glistening as we would hope that they would be. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu yisnagima b'midas hadin ha'gamura lo yisharu b'yado ki ima'at mizair. What would I really be left with if Hashem really judged me strictly about all of these mitzvos? The mitzvos even. Forget the averos. What if he judged the mitzvos? Ki kama v'kama mehen lo yishlim la'asososan b'chol pratehen v'ofnehen. What if I left out this halacha, that halacha? I didn't exactly do it perfectly. I didn't really do it right. Hana'usim la'osa mitzvah, that are so necessary and critical for that mitzvah. V'afilu osan sheshlimam kedin. Even though so we may have completely fulfilled, I did it, kehalacha. Lohayu ba'ahava uviyira uvesimcha haroi la'asiyasa mitzvah. What if I didn't do it with the right mentality, the right kavana, the right deos? What if I didn't do it? L'shma. I learned an hour. You know what an hour of Torah is going to mean for us in Yom Kippur? Gvaldik. An hour of Torah learning. Talmud Torah connected kulam. You hop on the, you hop on the daf yomi. You know what that's going to mean? So let's dissect that. Good. You want to dissect? Let's dissect. You want to start putting people on the table? You want to wheel them into the operator's room, into the operation room? You want to pick them apart surgically? So what does an hour of learning look like? First of all, it wasn't an hour. Because you came on 5 minutes late and you left 5 minutes early. It wasn't an hour. Were you really following the whole time? How much did your mind drift over the course of an hour chavrusa? Were you really paying an hour shiur? Were you really listening? Were you really following? Were you really trying your hardest? Were you really amel? Were you really toiling and learning? Were you appreciating that every word is expressing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's insight and das and knowledge? Were we lapping it up? Why did we do it in the first place? We did it because Talmud Torah connected kulam. Maybe 30% is Talmud Torah connected kulam, and maybe 20% is that I want my wife and my kids to think that I'm a big Talmud Chacham because, like, kavod. Maybe another 10% is that I want some friends to think I'm a big Talmud Chacham. Maybe another 30% is that, like, when we finish and see him and it's very exciting. It's how much am I really like looking over my shoulder? And by the way, 10% is it works out very conveniently. This gets me out of bedtime and bath time. You know, so 30% is lishma, and then you want to start picking people apart. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, so let's pick it apart. Let's pick it apart. Not just the averos, the mitzvos. How pure, how sparkling are any of the mitzvahs that we do? When we do something, to be kind, is it to be kind, or do we love the accolades that we get afterwards when we're kind? Do we love walking around the title of Baal Chesed? Do we love the idea that people in the community, our friends, think highly of us? How much of it is peer pressure? How much of it is, for whatever reason, the kavod and the honor that one day my name is going to be up on a plaque someplace? They're going to honor me. I'm going to get a gift. There are going to be cameras rolling. How much of it is purely Hashem, I just want to serve you. I just want to do your Torah. And how much of it is all these other things mixed in? So do we lend that same consideration to other people? When we see something happen, it's not right. It's not good. This isn't the way to do it. Do we jump to conclusions? Do we pick it apart? If we're picking it apart, is it because we're trying to find that nugget, that kernel of good? Or is it because I love picking it apart and just saying, oh, bad, 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 bad? Will we survive? Will we survive if that same scrutiny ends up being the sort of judgment that we ourselves need to go through? Can we survive? Can we survive in din if the way that we judge other people ultimately becomes the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges us? A matching campaign. Am I willing to be compassionate, says Hashem? Absolutely. Am I willing to judge you favorably? Absolutely. Am I willing to be Dan Makaf Sechos? Absolutely. Show me! Show me that you're willing to do the same. Show me that you're willing to be Dan Makaf Sechos. One more point, I'm skipping a little bit here. I'm going to finish up in just a couple of minutes. But Rashi, back on that Gemara, actually just before one of the Gemaras that we quoted, Masechah Shabbos, makes another very, very critical point. In addition to our judgment, in addition to our judgment for this world and for the next world and our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what about simply being Adam L'Chavera? What about the society and the community that we ourselves want to be part of, that we want to live in? Danes Chaver L'Kafsechos Bichlal Havas Shalom. It's part of building shalom. It's part of building peace. Building a peaceful community. I turned to him and said, no, it wasn't a chait. It wasn't a chait. You did your best. It was fine. It was okay. It was expelled. You had your reasons. Niskavin Latova. Somehow or another. Niskavin Latova. Anusaya. O Latova Niskavin. Yeshalom B'nei. That's what creates peace. That's what creates peace in a community. That's what creates peace between people. Like any bit of Mussar, I'll give you, I'll just make it biographical. You know, when I first started down this path, starting to pull sources together, starting to look at this material, you know, it occurred to me that this is such an important topic to be discussing right now. Because I think we all feel it. I think we all feel ourselves being judged. I think we all feel ourselves being judged by some group or another. The reality of a pandemic, the reality of COVID-19, the reality of trying to handle a pandemic against and within the context of everything else that we try to do as a community. There are competing ideals, and there are competing interests. We want to be, on the one hand, as safe as possible, and we also want to be as connected as possible. We want to build the greatest community we possibly can. We want to be as engaged as possible in Torah and in Tefillah, and at the same time, we want to make sure that we don't run afoul of any possible public health risk. And those things are not all compatible with each other. So whatever decision anyone makes, we feel ourselves being watched, because either it's not safe enough, or it's being overly safe. Either you're not engaging enough in Torah, or you're engaging too much in Torah. You're not engaging enough in Tefillah. You're engaging too much in Tefillah. The shul should have been open 4 months ago. The shul should still be closed. We all feel ourselves being watched. So where, I'll admit, did the embryo come from? This shiur in this topic is, Rabbeisai, stop judging me. Stop judging me. Try my best. Try my hardest. And knowing that likely we all feel that way, so this is going to land very well. And then I realized how mistaken that was. Because in reality, this is no different from any other Mussar shmooze. And what that means is that when we hear Mussar, the answer is not, whew, I'm glad you talked about that, because that guy really needed to hear that. That's not what Mussar is. And that was the evolution of this topic, even inside of my own mind. This came from a place of, I got to get this out there because I need people to stop judging. And where this ends is with me. And I hope that this is the case for all of us. It's with me. How much do I judge? How much do I judge the judgers? How much do I judge the judgers? When I feel myself being judged, who do you think you are to judge me? What's the matter with you? Who do you think you are? Don't you know how wrong you are? This is absolutely perfect. This is the only way to try. This is the only way to do things. And you're being nasty about it. I like your language. I like your tone. Who do you think you are? Isn't it possible that it's Kavin Latova? Isn't it possible that it's Kavin Latova? Whatever side you fall out on, have we really gotten to a point where we can no longer find Niskavin Latova? Really? That it's just so absolute right and wrong. Of course, obviously, without question, we would have people daven shoulder to shoulder and learn face to face without masks. Of course, that's what we would do. Of course. Without question, we wouldn't dream of even opening the shul. The shul and the yeshiva, everything should be totally closed. There should be no minyanim still. Of course, it's obvious. Is it so obvious? Is it so clear? Whatever decision we may have made, is it so clear, absolutely, that we're right? There's no way to see the other side of the coin. Have we lost all ability to have varied perspective? Really? Are we so insistent that everybody's got to keep apart that we can't appreciate the value of two people sitting together and learning together and what that does and what that creates? The ability to draw HaKadosh Baruch Hu's words down into this world, to have pilpul chaverim, to have chavrusas. Can we not appreciate what that means? Can we not appreciate what it means to have a minion, to storm the heavens? Can we not appreciate what tefillah b'tzibur actually is? Can we not appreciate how hampered, how inhibiting it is to have something over your face while you're trying to daven? Can we not appreciate how seriously a health crisis needs to be taken? Can we not appreciate how serious this is? Can we not appreciate that so many have died and so many have fallen ill, and the concern, the fear that people are still walking around with, genuinely and legitimately, that what happens if we don't have compliance, and what's this going to mean? What's this going to mean for me and the health of my family? What's this going to mean for my job and my livelihood if we have to completely shut everything down? What's this going to mean for parents and for grandparents? That we think that you're so crazy. That you're just out for blood because you have concern? On either side, are we incapable of seeing Niskavin Latova? And can't that spill over into so many areas of life? And again, it's not a matter of judging actions. We can walk around with clarity, as much clarity as we like, on, listen, this is right. This is what needs to be done. And I wish everybody would follow suit. It's fine, we can have differences of opinion. But can we no longer see Niskavin Latova? Can we no longer see the concern that we all walk around with, that we all carry on whatever side of the argument, on whatever side of any argument? We need to be able to see Niskavin Latova because it is our only chance of succeeding in our own judgment. Because if Hashem only judges us for our actions, we stand no chance. The best that we could possibly hope for is that, yeah, I know, Hashem, I totally messed up. This wasn't the year that I expected. I didn't do half as much. I didn't accomplish half as much as I thought that I would. And I failed twice more than I told myself that I would. And I feel like I'm still dealing with the same things year after year I'm just a wreck. This is a wreck of a year. How can I come before you? What am I asking you for? The best that I can ask for Hashem is just please see today on Yom Kippur when I stand before you, Niskavin Latova. I really want to be close to you, but I'm a human being and I'm frail and I'm stupid and I mess up and I'm lazy. But please, Niskavim Latova, see into my heart, Niskavim Latova. Hashem's got such a checkbook. Hashem's got such a deep bank account, deep, deep pockets. He's absolutely ready. But show me that it really, really matters to you. Show me that Niskavim Latova, that judging somebody according to Niskavim Latova, show me that that's your motto. Show me that that's something that's near and dear. Show me that that's how you're willing to judge the people who share this space with you and the people beyond the space. Show me that everybody else in your sphere, that you're willing to look at them and find a way to say Niskavim Latova. It's what we need for our judgment. It's what we need for our community. It's what we need for our nation. If we're able to say Latova Niskavim Yesh Shalom Beinehem, says Rashi, then there will be peace. Because we can argue and we can go back and forth. But when we start to view one another as being purely malicious, when we start to assume the worst in one another's very character, how can we ever get along? How can you ever say good Shabbos to somebody that you view as an utter monster? You're a monster and you're a jerk and you're terrible and you're horrible in the way that you act and the way you behave. How can you ever face one another again? Only if we say Niskavim Latova. Our entire tshuva, look through the language, is always plural. Because we can only come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu in tshuva as a community, as a collective. Ashamnu, bagadnu, al-chet shechatanu lifanecha. Looking for Niskavim Latova, being dan l'kaf sechos, is the glue that keeps our community together. So the Chafetz Chaim approached this man. And he said, Shalom Aleichem. He's very confused. He looks up at it. Shalom Aleichem. Looks like a very pious individual. What are you coming over to my table for? Hi. Shalom Aleichem. You know, I just want you to know, I heard about you. And I had to meet you. They've told me everything about you. You have to meet me. Wait. They told me everything about you. Somebody who was stripped of any possibility of Jewish education. Somebody who was taken from his home at such a young age, from his family, said he never had any connection to the Jewish community, to the Jewish nation, never received any education. Somebody who went through everything that you went through, the misery of being in the Tsar's army, who and what you were exposed to. I would never, hope for that for me, myself, anybody I know, for one's eyes, for one's precious, pure eyes to see those sorts of sights, for his ears to hear those sorts of sounds. And you went through all of that. You ran the gauntlet. And here you are. You came to sleep in a Jewish inn. You came to eat a kosher meal. After all of that, just to identify as a Jew, I had to meet you. I had to meet you and I had to tell you, I'm jealous of the schar that you're going to receive in Olam Haba for that. The reward that you'll get in heaven for being through all of that and still remaining attached, some measure or another, to the Jewish nation, incredible. The man starts to tremble and he starts to cry and he asks who he is and he explains, I'm a rabbi, I live in Rodin, I'm here to sell my books. And this fellow had heard enough about, you know, a special guest who was going to be coming to Vilna to know that this was somebody very, very important. And he just breaks down and he starts sobbing. He says, I'm so far. I think of myself as Jewish, but I'm so far. And they talk and they discuss. And the Chafetz Chaim encourages him. He says, if somebody like you, somebody who's been through all that you have, if you start taking on mitzvos, Torah, keep Shabbos, continue to eat, keep kosher, the Gan Eden that you're going to have waiting for you is remarkable. And your whole life will be so much better, this world than the next world. Kachava, this person became a frum Jew. Chafetz Chaim peeled back layer after layer. He saw somebody who was angry, who was boisterous, who was loud, who was offensive. Who knows what kinds of things this sort of person would have put up on Facebook if only he had had that vehicle. And what the Chafetz Chaim saw, layer after layer after layer, was Niskaven Latova. When you peel back the layers, are you looking for Ra'a or are you looking for Tova? If we look for the good, we build up another Jew. If we look for the good, then this becomes another Jew that we can continue to associate with, that we can have a relationship with, who can be part of our community. Yesh shalom b'nei'en, as Rashi says. If we peel back the layers and we look for the good and not for the bad, then we can turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and genuinely say that, as much as granted, we're not worthy, Hashem. Don't get us wrong. We're not worthy. But we can stand before you today saying that although this might be a very, very long process and this will be a life's work, we fully intend to be Niskaven Litova between now and Yom Kippur. Thought experiment. Think about those in your life who get the most and who have gotten the most under your skin in the past weeks and the past months. Consider them and find a way. Niskaven Litova. It does not need to mean that you agree with the actions. And it doesn't mean that you agree with the words anymore. Then we would expect Hashem to agree to grant his imprimatur to our actions and our misactions, our deeds and our misdeeds, to our words. We would never dare ask Hashem for that. All we're asking for simply is Hashem. See that deep in my heart, I was Niskaven Latova. If between now and Yom Kippur, we can engage in an exercise where we will do exactly what we're going to ask Hashem to do on Yom Kippur itself, then Amir Tzah Hashem, he'll grant us the same. We'll be Niskaven Latova. And he'll be Niskaven Latova. We'll have been down the Kafsachos, and Amir Tzah Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, looking down at us on Yom HaDin, will likewise respond and be down the Kafsachos. Wishing everybody a Gemar Chasima Tova, Shavua Tov, have a wonderful night. Thanks for joining.